Love is a construct, a symphony of emotional chaos, and in some cases, a motivator of extremes. No wonder the Bible dedicates 1 Corinthians 13 to it. Love is patient, love is kind, love does not envy. But for some, love is blind, love is danger. Love is death. April 11, 2014. A day in which jealousy, chaos, envy, and violence would reign supreme. A friendship between two young women in their early 20s severed all over the love of a young man. With a human life attached to it. Could it be betrayal, self-defense, retaliation, or the hand of fate dealing an unfortunate hand? Dearly beloved, this is the story surrounding the incarceration of Zelia Sulemana. My name is John Andrew Addo, and welcome to the Sanctuary of Screams, this den of nightmares, and this repository of stories forged from the blood of both the innocent and the guilty. Welcome to Mayhem. Our story today on Zelia Sulemana begins in the heart of the northern region, in Tamale. Tamale serves as the capital of the northern region, blending tradition with modernity. The streets showcase a mix of heritage and progress, featuring both traditional mud houses and contemporary structures. It may even soon become a historic home of world records. And of its environs, once lived a lady amongst them, a 22-year-old named Zelia Sulemana. Not much is known about her upbringing that exists within the public domain, but one can only assume that she had a basic education like many within her community. She is the daughter of a security man in a low-income household, trying to find a way to survive. Zelia herself would become a trader, doing her best to construct a meaningful path through life. As fate would deem it, Zelia would trip on her path and fall right into the arms of love. Her new interest would be a young gentleman, admired by many, named Alhassan Abdul Rahman. She would fall head over heels in love with him, and the two would enter a loving relationship. But with everyone in their relationship, there exists a past which cannot be extinguished. For Alhassan, his past involved a woman about the same age as Zelia, named Raudia Aminu. Zelia would gain knowledge of Raudia, and based on whichever account of the story you believe, she plotted and planned to eliminate her perceived competition. Zelia would find out that Raudia was a nursing student, and seeing as her stance as a trader may not match her up to the level of Raudia, she decides to befriend her, even asking her for assistance, for motivation, as she too wanted to pursue the path of nursing, just as Raudia. The two, based on that, would form what was deemed to be a good friendship. But little did anybody know that this was part of an intricate plan by Zelia. Friday, April 11th, 2014, the stage would be set for a tragic confrontation. A simple invitation turned into a scene as Zelia, driven by jealousy and rage, would confront the victim about her relationship with Alhassan. What would start as a heated argument would quickly escalate into an act of shocking brutality. With no provocation, Zelia unleashed violence, stabbing the victim not once, but twice, in the chest and the abdomen. Raudia would be overpowered and now defenseless, and she would slip into unconsciousness with her life hanging by a thread. As if it was scripted, Zelia would attempt to escape in a desperate manner on a motorcycle, only to be thwarted by a good Samaritan. Faced with the reality that there was no easy way out, Zelia would resort to slashing her hand. A claim followed that it was Zelia who had inflicted these wounds herself. The aftermath of this tragic confrontation would see both Zelia and Raudia rushed to the hospital, but fate had already sealed Raudia's tragic end. Autopsy revelations would show hemorrhagic shock, a massive left hemothorax, and a puncture wound to the left chest wall. 2 years later, in July 2016, Zelia would be found guilty by a 5-member jury for murder. The presiding judge, Mr. Justice Charles Kwanza, would then order a pregnancy test to determine whether or not the death penalty would apply to Zelia. And after the results of this test would come out as negative, Zelia Suleimana would be sentenced to death by hanging. And even though Amnesty International themselves, through their director, Lawrence Amesu, would plea for justice reform and take a stance against the death penalty, calling for its complete eradication, citing Zelia, Zelia would be sent to the Insawam medium security prisons, to the condemned cell, to await her death by the gallows. A 22-year-old life shattered forever. Dearly beloved, as I mentioned before, there are different accounts to this particular story. It just so happens that the earlier narrated one was that of an eyewitness who claims to have seen firsthand events unfold. Zelia herself, in a police report and statement, will take us back to the events of April 11, 2014. On that Friday night, at about 6 p.m., Zelia said she received a call from Raudia, inviting her for a conversation of the utmost importance. A few hours later, at 9 p.m., Zelia would take a motorbike ridden by one Adams towards the home of Raudia in Lamashegu in Tamale. Zelia claims that once she got to the junction, she met Raudia, who then insisted on the two having a private conversation. She asked Adams to excuse them, and as the two of them walked towards the home of Raudia, Raudia stabbed Zelia in the back. This would cause Zelia to turn around to retrieve the knife and to also stab Raudia in the back. She would claim, however, that Raudia would scream her chest before dropping to the ground. It was in the aftermath of this confrontation, so sudden and swift, that the two of them would be rushed to hospital, the result of which was the death of Raudia. It also just so happens that about 4 years later, Zelia would come again with a slightly different version of events. Zelia would state meeting Raudia at her home. Upon getting to her, she realizes that Raudia was wearing a cloth, or what our Nigerian neighbors would refer to as a wrapper. Raudia would proceed to go into her house and then change into a blouse and jeans trousers. She would notice a knife lodged in the brassiere of Raudia, to which she would inquire as to what that knife was doing there. Raudia would say Zelia has no business knowing the answer. This would be the basis of the argument, to which Zelia would receive two stab wounds, one in her arm and one in the palm of her hand. At this instance, Zelia seems to be overpowered, overwhelmed, injured, and in need of defense. It is at this juncture that she also claims to stab her, only in an effort to get away and save her own life. She claims the two of them were separated in this heated fight, after which they were both taken to hospital and Raudia lost her life. Depending on which version of events you look at, it may seem as though clarity may have set in for Zelia years after this incident. Either that, or it may just be another twisted lie. It is hard to say, and it is best not to pass judgment, at least from this standpoint. However, I did find the dynamics of relationships very interesting, and for that I sought the counsel of a woman with brilliance. I bring to you Helen Appiah Ampofo. Dearly beloved, I am joined by a woman of many talents. She is one of the voices of 3FM Sunrise, the Lady Circle, and 3FM's Keeping It Real, the one and only Helen Appiah Ampofo.
Love that introduction. Hi, how are we doing?
Zelia Sulemana, a story that has elements of murder and relationship dynamics generally. You are the de facto authority on all things relationships in media general, at least in my mind. The first thing I want to ask is, how much of a commonality is it for people or for women to go this far in relationships to the extent of
exing or offing, to use Gen Z parlance, someone else's life in the name of love?
I mean, wars have been fought in the name of love. It's a tale as old as time. Like you mentioned, the elements of love, romance, what we call romance murders, and especially, I would say, in our part of the world where we put a lot of prominence on romantic relationships, we see people go to crazy lengths to protect said institution. It's always quite fascinating when we see the emotion boil over to the extent that somebody thinks, listen, I've got to eliminate the competition. I've got to eliminate whatever it is that is standing in the way of myself and this relationship that I cherish so much. So women and you know, romance murders, maybe not as common as what we see from their male counterparts, especially in this part of the world. Maybe again because, you know, men are maybe more prone to violent acts, will go to greater and more violent lengths to protect their relationships. But the lengths to which people will go, women will go to protect that romantic relationship, cannot be underestimated. Yeah.
I may have heard in probably an alternate reality you say the words, hell hath no fury than a woman scorned. If I'm correct, am I?
We're dreaming the same dream. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. And I mean, I immediately put myself in Zelia's shoes when I think about just jealousy, thinking about that age as well. You know, when you're a little bit younger, the way these things are blown up in your mind. And we all go through jealousy, we all experience it, but it takes a certain individual, a very specific type of person, to take it as far as she went. And as we, you know, carry on in this conversation, I'm sure we'll explore the different accounts that were put forth about what happened on that day. But at the core of it, I think that one, we're dealing with a very callous individual, but also what are some of the factors that surround this case that make it unique, and what are the factors that also mean that this is something that we see across the board and we're not paying attention to? How do we get here? How does one get here? We all have to look within. What are we capable of when we feel threatened and when we feel our romantic relationships are threatened? Would we go as far as Zelia? Many people will think, oh, this is the unthinkable. But what are the common human themes that run throughout each relationship that mean that we all have to make sure we don't unleash the Zelia within us?
Mm-hmm. And it's good you mentioned putting yourself in her shoes. And let's start from that standpoint. 22 years old. Not only do I want to ask you about what you think her mindset was at the time, but what was your snap reaction to seeing the story as it unfolded?
You think, first of all, you think how dumb, you know, because at 22, your whole life is ahead of you. You think about a life lost and a life destroyed. You know, one party's gone, family and friends will never see a hair again. Another party sentenced to death. Another life destroyed. So, you know, you think, what is the reason? All for what? At the center of this is some, you know, a relationship that, if had run its natural course, probably wouldn't even progress even further. And then you think about the premeditated nature, or alleged premeditated nature, of this crime, because there are different accounts of what exactly happened. And then you think, my goodness, we live amongst callousness. It takes a certain specific individual not only to think about how they're going to perpetrate a crime, but actually go through with it. You know, you might have some sinister inclinations. Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But actually putting that plan into motion and even having the foresight to possibly cover up that crime, main word that came into mind was callous. It sends a chill up your spine when you read about the different accounts, even going as far as Zelia, were told by accounts of a passerby, going as far as even stabbing herself. And this is something you'll see in other, I've seen in other jurisdictions and other crimes where you will pretend like you're also hurt, or you harm yourself so that it provides a different account of what's happening.
And as an alibi.
as an alibi. And I think to myself, do you know what kind of individual you have to be to inflict some sort of pain on yourself? I mean, even to pinch yourself is a big deal, let alone go as far as maybe stabbing yourself to create that alibi. You think, callous, just callous.
At 22, the priorities, I don't think, would be properly aligned. Emotionally, that is, because 22, your life is ahead of you. You're still growing up, in as much as you want to think that you have everything figured out, life is really about to hit you. And so the other thing that speaks to me in this entire story is, you usually hear of men retaliating in anger when there are certain situations of this kind, going as far as to kill or maim their competition, but you never hear of a woman go this far, particularly one who isn't, she has the prize. What do you think would inspire such an action ultimately from her?
It's that human emotion, jealousy. I mean, and you think about your own life and where you've experienced jealousy. It might not just be in romantic relationships, but especially for whatever reason, in that sphere of life, the thought of having another contender, another individual interfering with this relationship that you hold so dearly, it can send even the sanest of us spiraling, which is what we see when you talk about men who will go after, the competition, sometimes go as far as even hurting, maiming, or killing their romantic partner, and then sometimes even, offing themselves, killing themselves. It goes as far as that. But the saying, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, exists for a reason. Throughout history, we do see women also being perpetrators of violent crime, especially in the romance arena, probably where you'd see it most from women. But I agree, that there is a huge disparity in when, how men will react to this or how women will react to this. I think just, again, naturally we see men being the perpetrators of more violent crime. That could be, again, just due to strength or just having that inclination, if you will, or socialization about men, being stronger or being maybe more angry or more violent. I'm just talking very generally from a lay person's, viewpoint. But it's not far-fetched, as we can see now, for women to be perpetrators of this type of crime. It's happened. We're talking about it. It happens.
Zelia's story is also, when you examine it, it gets very murky. It gets very complicated very quickly. There's a common saying, there's three sides to a coin, generally. There's one party side, there's the other party side, and then there's the truth. But here's the scenario where we potentially have four different scenarios. There's the account which we will never hear from the deceased. Let's go through them one after the other. Which of them, when you look at the facts, do you think may make the most sense? And if so, would it have meant that the court's ruling was harsh to Zelia?
I think if it's an issue of, if you believe the account of, let's say, self-defense, for example. So let's take the account where Zelia alleges that she is stabbed in the back and then in turn takes out the knife and then also stabs the now deceased lady in the back. Then, of course, that changes the character of the entire case and the sentencing that was pronounced upon Zelia. On the other account, or on the other side, another account for me, which is fairly strong, I would say, is because there's another party that's involved. What would be this person's motivation to cook up a story as elaborate as that? That's what makes me think, well, actually, now you have somebody else outside of these two parties who, for me, I don't know what that motivation would be to make up such a sensational story. When we talk about jealousy and the lengths that women would go to protect their romantic interest, is it far-fetched? I mean, it's a sensational story, somebody taking out that knife, stabbing themselves. But for me, it's just the case of what is this bystander, this witness, going to gain by introducing that into the mix, if you will. Given the story in its entirety, I'm inclined to go in that direction.
They both had family. Zelia herself recounts a sister of the deceased reacting almost very violently as she was sentenced to death in the courtroom. There is also the side of her father, who didn't even know his daughter was on trial because her case kept getting adjourned. And by the time she was called to the stand, she was sentenced by the 5-member jury. And he only found out when he went to visit her with food at the Tamale prisons, only to find out that she had gone to, taken to Interwam to the condemned cells. How much of an effect do you project this could have had on any family, particularly with this story as well?
I mean, can you imagine? For me, again, as a family member, it would be devastating, of course, losing a daughter to, you know, this unfortunate stabbing, losing another daughter to the prison system, right? And again, getting to the cracks of the matter, why, how did we end up here? Because of a relationship, because of issues of jealousy. I think for any family member, that would make me even sadder, that what is the reason that we're actually going through all of this, really and truly, for a couple that are not even married. This is a boyfriend-girlfriend scenario at the age of 22. Still so young, still so much, you know, life ahead. As a family member, thinking about Zelia, it would send shivers down my spine. Maybe I'll be in denial because I'd be wanting to believe my family member, my daughter, whatever the case is, Zelia, and wanting to go along the lines of, you know, of self-defense. And even then, it would be disappointing that there's fracas even because of another individual, because of, you know, a young man. But of course, the jury would have had to have made this decision, you know, eliminating all reasonable doubts. Would that make me then think, oh, actually, I've raised a callous individual. I've been living with a very callous individual. Would that make you question, maybe, what do you really know of the people that you live with, your family members, those that you are in the same community with? Can you ever really let your guard down? Can you ever really be comfortable? Do you really know a person? I think those are some of the thoughts that will be running through your mind. Again, I go back to this eyewitness account, which for me was, you know, quite strong. I think the jury would have relied heavily on that. Again, why would the eyewitness, what is their motivation for even spicing up this story? Haven't seen her, they say, slash her hand and, you know, stab herself. Again, it just paints a certain picture for me that still sends, you know, a shiver down my spine. A sad situation, certainly, for both families.
There is also the talk of the death by hanging, the death penalty. We've spoken to whether or not it was a harsh sentencing, but we are currently in a bit of a hanging state with it because two pieces of legislature have recently put it into this state where the only way that death penalty would be ascribed to a crime is high treason, and practically all other sentences would be commuted to life sentences. If there is the possibility of her being freed, being let go, do you think it would be well warranted, or do you think it would be unfair to the family for the crime that has been committed in self-defense or out of malice?
When I think about the prison system as a whole, I'll be honest, I do find it quite conflicting. Centuries of human beings being sent to prison, has that been effective enough in being a deterrence? Crime still goes up. And so you think about some of the other, let's say, socioeconomic factors that actually lead people to crime in the first place, and whether or not that's where a bulk of our attention should be on, really preventing the crime before it occurs. So that in an instance like this, Zelia, and this, you know, death by stabbing and this eventual sentencing, what could have been done, you know, to prevent this? There are many people who definitely think that the death penalty should be abolished. I certainly agree with that. And I think that we need a strong deterrence for this type of crime. It should be unattractive for another person to you know, take someone's life, especially over an issue for me again, which is so frivolous, which it's so unthinkable. For what, you know? And so you think, all for what? What's the purpose? Why are these, you know, why do we have to go through this? But I do hope that the death penalty is extinguished, it's abolished. And really and truly thinking about the prison service, some reformations have to be made. Can we actually get to the heart of the matter? Prevent crime. I think that's something that's a little bit more complex. In this particular scenario, I do think a fairly lengthy sentence would suffice. I don't know that I would have pronounced the death penalty on a 22-year-old, regardless of the crime. But those might be controversial thoughts. But I don't think that I'm alone in this stance, because again, what do we do before we actually get to the status of a crime? More needs to be done, I would say, by the state and the society, so we can, you know, have a second thought about the position of prisons in our society. Again, not everybody will agree with that stance. For many people, it's all about punishment. Forget about reformation, rehabilitation, and all of that. They want the perpetrators punished. That's the primary desire. And what does that serve? Who does that really serve when it all comes down to it? But that's another conversation for a different day.
This is death we are dealing with. It's not ordinary by any stretch of the imagination, in as much as it's a common occurrence. But should it be considered an ordinary crime for which it should be commuted to a life sentence as opposed to the death penalty standing?
I think, like you mentioned, steps are being taken so that the death penalty sentence is relegated to, you could say, crimes that are not ordinary, high treason. Again, for me, my stance is the same. I don't know if a life for a life is the appropriate response to the crime of murder, and I stick by that.
We live in a human society, an imperfect one. Things like this, unfortunately, may brew to this level. What advice would you give to people who may be on the brink of doing the same as Zelia did before?
I think the advice would definitely be going to the wider society, because somebody whose emotions cannot be regulated to the point that for them the only way to resolve an issue is by murder, I think that it would take a special kind of messaging, you know, for that person. But I think as a society, we have to put more prominence on how we teach younger populace, how we even teach ourselves on how to regulate our emotions. I hope I'm making sense in that. Life is full of peaks and troughs, good times, bad times. And if every time things don't go your way, your response is to eliminate the competition and eliminate, you know, whatever it is that's standing as a roadblock, you'll spend an eternity doing some pretty crazy things. So for me, it's not just advice to individuals who might have these maybe dangerous inclinations. It'd be for the wider society. Are we paying attention to some of these issues? Last year, I think we saw a lot more, shall I say, romance murder suicides in the newspapers. What does that signal? That maybe as a society, we're not doing enough, again, to help citizens regulate their emotions. Is it a deficiency in our school system? Is it a deficiency in our mental health structure? Is it a breakdown of the society as a whole? Is it an issue of priority? There are a lot of things that go into how a society behaves. And that's why for me, my advice is to everybody, and to also be each other's keepers, and to, you know, keep or be vigilant, if you will, because again, we live amongst all types of characters. Somebody might have maybe picked up on some of these inclinations and dismissed them. Maybe, you know, what girls are like. She might have been talking about this, and this person has done this, this person has done this. What prominence do we put on such pronouncements? Are we still living as a community? Are we concerned about what the next person is doing? Are we keeping our eyes open? I'm not talking about being nosy, but I'm talking about ensuring that, you know, the corner where you are is safe and you're being vigilant. So I think that's what I would say, you know, in summary, that this is a societal issue. Very much so. How we prop each other up, how we support each other, what is important to us, how are we empowering younger generations? That would be the focus.
You have been very much of an open book. You have been very insightful. The Dearly Beloved and I thank you.
Thank you for having me.
As we close the book on this chilling story, this unfortunate saga of events involving Zelia, it is important to reflect on every single detail as presented. If she is in fact guilty, then this tale of manipulation, violence, and fatal betrayal serves as a stark reminder that darkness can lurk behind seemingly innocent friendships. In the end, the web of deceit unraveled, leaving behind a life lost to senseless brutality. Is there more that needs to be done? Is self-defense not the way to save yourself? So many more questions, but so little time. I do none of this by myself. I have my producer to thank, a woman that pulls out these stories, researches them at heart, and makes sure to bring clear and concise facts to the table. A special acknowledgement goes to the one and only Jiffa Makafui. I would also like to thank Helen for her insight into the world of love and how it can be intertwined with crime. And to you, dearly beloved, thank you. As always, stay safe, keep your doors locked, and never stop seeking and inquiring into the truths of this world. My name is John Andrew Addo. I serve as your host, and this is Mayhem.